Welcome to KDNK's Weekly Newsreel, a news magazine that takes a look at the week's top local and regional news stories aired on KDNK between Monday and Friday. Subscribe to our podcast and give us a review on iTunes. If you have a tip on something you'd like the KDNK news team to cover, send it to news@kdnk.org. All submissions are confidential. The weekly newsreel is underwritten by R.J. Paddywhack Pet Outfitters next to City Market in El Jebel. Open 7 days a week. More information at 970-963-1700 or rjpaddywhacks.com. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh, your host. First, an avalanche warning is in place through Sunday morning for the Aspen, Steamboat, Flat Tops, Vail, and Summit County areas. Avalanche danger is moderate for the Grand Mesa and Southern San Juans, considerable for the Northern San Juans, and high for the Front Range, the Sawatch Range, and Gunnison. You can find more information at avalanche.state.co.us. This week's storm dumped feet of snow in some areas across the state. Rabbit Ears Pass got close to 52 inches, Loveland Pass 32 inches, Hayden 25 inches, Winter Park 29 inches. 10 new inches of snow were added to Aspen Mountain and Highlands, and 9 inches to Snowmass and Sunlight. More snow is expected in the Roaring Fork and Colorado River valleys over the weekend. A winter weather advisory is in effect for the Aspen area through 6 a.m. Monday. Leadville will also see snow through Monday. Now, for a few of the week's headlines from around the region.
Workers at a Platteville oil and gas production site in Weld County triggered a blaze Monday night that caused heavy damage to the site and shot flames up to 30 feet in the air. The Denver Post reports the neighbors who called the fire department also reported loud explosions. Plant owner PDC Energy says there were no explosions. Over a dozen firefighters responded to the fire, which took over 6 hours to extinguish. No one was injured during the incident, and the cause is still under investigation.
A rifleman was arrested Saturday after he fired multiple shots at an acquaintance and missed. The Post-Independent reports that Jamie Babcock faces an attempted first-degree murder charge and a Class 5 felony charge for possessing a weapon as a previous offender. State Senator Carrie Donovan of Vail introduced a bill this week to study challenges facing the state's backcountry search and rescue groups. Donovan says as the state encourages recreation, it needs to better support people involved in rescue efforts. The study would track the growing demand for emergency services and identify potential funding sources to help cover costs. And now more from KDNK station manager Gavin Dahl.
Last week, City of Glenwood Springs closed on a purchase of land at the intersection of 13th and School Street. The Post-Independent reports the site, originally owned by Western Petroleum, was used for gasoline storage. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment certifies that it's clear of all hazardous waste material. City officials are looking at the property as a potential location for a recycling center. In 2017, Glenwood's in-town recycling center was relocated to the South Canyon landfill. Since then, recycling rates have dropped by 50%. The Colorado Senate has approved a bill to repeal the death penalty. Friday's vote now moves the legislation to the House, where it's expected to pass. Governor Jared Polis has said he will sign the bill. The law would apply to offenses charged on or after July 1st. It would not apply to the three men currently on Colorado's death row.
You're listening to KDNK's Weekly Newsreel, a news magazine that takes a look at the week's top local and regional stories aired on KDNK between Monday, February 3rd and Friday, February 7th. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh, your host. The impeachment trial of President Donald Trump last week saw U.S. Senators Cory Gardner and Michael Bennett at odds, reports KDNK's Lucas Turner.
Democratic Senator Michael Bennett spoke about the importance of the rule of law and railed against partisanship, describing the U.S. Senate with words like pathetic, lazy, and broken.
We voted on 26 amendments last year. 26! The world's greatest deliberative body. we passed 8 amendments in a year. Pathetic.
Senator Bennett also criticized Republican senators, saying they were, quote, turning their backs and closing their eyes.
And now, when we are the only body on planet Earth charged with the responsibility of dealing with the guilt or innocence of this president, we can't even bring ourselves to have witnesses and evidence as part of a fair trial.
Republican Senator Cory Gardner says there is no conclusive reason to impeach the president and condemned the process as a partisan effort.
House managers repeatedly stated that they had established overwhelming evidence and an airtight case to remove the president. Yet they also repeatedly claimed they needed additional investigation and testimony. A case cannot be both overwhelming and airtight and yet incomplete at the same time. That contradiction is not mere semantics.
Senator Gardner also called the impeachment process illegitimate and defective and says it could set a precedent that would, quote, usurp the people's power to elect the president.
It has been said in this trial that the American people cannot make that decision for themselves. I couldn't disagree more. I believe in the American people. I believe in the power of our people to evaluate the president, to make their decision in November, and to move forward in our enduring effort to form a more perfect union. I do not believe a Senate nullification of 2 elections over defective impeachment articles is in the nation's best interest.
You can find remarks from both senators at senate.gov or on YouTube. KDNK News, I'm Lucas Turner.
And a handful of locals showed up at the intersection of Highways 82 and 133 on Wednesday afternoon to protest Trump's acquittal.
KDNK wants to know who organized this thing.
It's just a spontaneous demonstration. It's a peaceful demonstration.
And what is your name?
John.
And where do you live?
Somerset.
And what are you doing here at the hitchhiking station?
We're trying to encourage people to vote for the Democrats in November because we feel like it's our best opportunity to upright the ship. And I can only speak for myself, but I think we're kind of in uncharted waters with our democracy right now. Because what President Trump and what the Senate have just voted upon seems to be contrary to the truth. And the truth is really important. And so we realize that that this is our democracy and this is how we have to exercise it. And we believe in our right to mass assemble, although there's only 4 of us here. But we figured we'd come out and try to let people know that it's okay to talk about this, and it's okay to talk about it peacefully, and it's okay to try to figure out how we can get our country back under the Democratic Party. That's going to give us the best chance for a better future for our country than where we're headed right now.
Libby, my sign says, "Want high-speed trains, windmills? Not with these crooks, vote blue." And I actually researched it, and if you do on high-speed rail, you better vote for the Democrats because you don't stand a chance with Donald Trump. He actually withheld money from California when they tried to build a high-speed rail. And he's just trying to stop progress.
So why are you standing here on this freezing cold day?
Because it makes me feel good to just say something rather than just hold it all in and let everybody just become aware that, you know, maybe there's a chance, maybe there's still hope. Just get out and vote.
Kate.
What does your sign say?
It says, every tweet you make, every tan you fake, every law you break, we'll be watching you.
Sort of a send-up of the police song.
Yes.
What are you doing out here, Kate?
Well, I come from the 60s and 70s and the Vietnam War and the protests and how it made such a difference in that war and the end of that war. And I really believe in democracy and having my voice heard, and I would really like to encourage people to get out there and protest and make their voice heard. And I hope today in the bigger cities there's a huge turnout because our democracy is at stake right now.
Dump Trump, bring back kindness.
You're listening to KDNK's weekly newsreel, highlighting regional and local stories aired on KDNK between Monday, February 3rd and Friday, February 7th, with in-kind support from Rifle Community TV, providing local information and non-commercial programming, including coverage of Rifle City Council, the RE2 School Board, the Energy Advisory Board, Northwest Colorado Oil and Gas Forum, and more. Rifle TV is at riflenow.org. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh, your host. Leadville was in the news this week. Lucas Turner spoke with Amy Frickholm about a fundraiser to expand the 30-year-old community kitchen at St. George Episcopal Church.
We now serve a free community meal 5 times a week. We serve lunch Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday at 11:30, and then we serve a dinner on Saturday evenings at 5 p.m. We serve about 10,000 meals a year, so roughly 50 people per meal come to the church and sit down and eat together. And we don't have any kind of food budget right now. We get all of our food from Target, Whole Foods, and Safeway, who donate food that would otherwise be headed to the dumpster. So we consider ourselves to rescue about 10,000 pounds of food a year. And that is the food that we use to cook all of the community meals.
This is clearly a well-established operation, but there are still some new things happening, including this proposed renovation. And this Thursday, you'll be raising funds to renovate the kitchen at St. George. Why do the renovation, and what will it mean for the operation moving forward?
When the community meals first started, the people who ran the community meals actually cooked the meals out of a broom closet with a hot plate. There was no kitchen at St. George. And then in the late 90s, the church put in a small kitchen. It's very small. It's a little galley kitchen. And a couple of years ago, the Food Access Coalition here in Leadville in Lake County was doing a lot of research about food insecurity and what the food needs in Lake County were. And they put together a study of what would be needed in Lake County. And the first thing they came up with was a commercial kitchen that could be used for things like cooking classes. It could be used to incubate small businesses. It could be used to create greater food preservation or be used as a food hub for healthy food distribution. And they came to St. George, they came to the community meals, and they asked if we would be willing to partner with them in the creation of this kitchen. So after a lot of study, we decided that what we would do is renovate the kitchen at St. George and transform it into this community kitchen. So we have this vision for a broader food access hub in Lake County that would help people who are experiencing all kinds of food insecurity know where to come to get food, and especially healthy food, and also to learn how to prepare it, to learn how to access it. So we have a much broader vision now for what the community kitchen could potentially be. But it's very expensive, and we have a lot of fundraising to do. So we're writing grants, of course, and we're doing all kinds of things to try to raise money. But this Thursday night, we're having a concert with a really famous group, Story Hill, coming to Lake County to help us raise funds for this. And so we're really excited to have them.
Do you know what the renovations would look like at this point? As in, what would you add that's not already there?
We do. We have an architectural firm that donated a set of plans to us. So they took a careful look at the kitchen and they put together a plan. So at this point, we would take out the walls between a small food pantry that we have in the kitchen and a small office that we have and turn it all into one kitchen. So we will have a walk-in freezer and a walk-in cooler, and we'll have double ovens, and we'll have a teaching space. And so those are some of the things that we'll add with the renovation.
So you're hosting a concert fundraiser with Story Hill. What should people expect at this fundraiser?
The concert starts at 7 o'clock. Doors open at 6:30, and a couple of local businesses have created sponsorship for this concert. So they're donating beer and wine, and tickets are $20 at the door. Concert starts at 7.
So it's at St. George Episcopal Mission this Thursday, starting at 6:30?
Yep, doors open at 6:30. And the address for St. George is 200 West 4th Street in Leadville.
Well, thank you for your time today, Amy. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
KDNK's state capitol reporter Scott Franz sent in stories about how state lawmakers are debating a bill that would limit where residents can find a new pet and pushback against Governor Jared Polis' statement that hospitals and their executives are to blame for the skyrocketing cost of health care. Pets first.
The so-called Humane Pet Act would ban the sale of dogs and cats at pet stores. It also adds several new rules for pet breeders. The bill's sponsors want to restrict how often dogs can be bred and ban the use of small cages. The new rules also require that breeders give their animals time to exercise. Supporters of the bill say the state's current rules fail to protect dogs and cats from poor living conditions, but groups representing dog breeders oppose the measure. The American Kennel Club says the new regulations would limit what breeds can be adopted and increase public health risks due to more rescue dogs coming from out of state. I'm Scott Franz at the state capitol.
Hospitals around the state say Governor Jared Polis' agenda for creating a public health insurance option to lower costs will hurt patients and destabilize the market.
The last thing Jamie Harrison thinks about while skiing at Beaver Creek is what he pays for health insurance.
Between my wife and I, we pay over $1,700 a month for coverage that will only kick in after each one of us individually has incurred something like $6,500 in medical expenses.
Harrison is fresh off the slopes and still wearing his ski gear when I meet him in a coffee shop in the town of Avon. The retired real estate investor is not happy with his healthcare options.
If we were to get ill or to have an injury, which, you know, for budgeting purposes is sort of what we need to think about, the cost is, you know, well over $20,000 a year.
The Harrisons live in Eagle County, which is one of 22 counties with only one insurance carrier on the individual market. The couple are too young to qualify for Medicare, so they took what they could get.
The only benefit that I got from the payment that I made to the carrier was a physical and maybe a vaccine. So that was $24,000. You know, I can't say that it's down the drain, but it's awful hard to swallow that I'm paying that much money and essentially got nothing for it other than, I guess, some peace of mind, which is important.
At the state capitol, Democratic Representative Dylan Roberts is trying to help the Harrisons and others who are forced to pay high premiums because of where they live. He thinks a public health insurance option will create competition and, in turn, drive down costs.
This plan put some limits on how much hospitals can charge under the plan. It raises the amount of money per dollar that insurance companies have to spend on your actual care.
Governor Jared Polis is also behind it, bringing it up as a legislative priority in his State of the State address.
When you have more choices as a consumer, companies have to compete for your business, which means lower prices.
But hospitals and insurance companies have already launched a counter effort, spending more than $100,000 on ads like this one.
The state government option puts politicians in control of our healthcare system and could mean 3 million Coloradans with employer-provided coverage paying $1.5 billion in higher costs.
I reached out to one of the more vocal opponents, the Colorado Hospital Association, but they did not return calls for this story.
Quite frankly, the public option scares the heck out of me.
In the meantime, some Republicans are joining the fight, like House Minority Leader Patrick Neville.
It's going to lead to cost shifts to the private insurance market and the private market that eventually they're not going to be able to withstand, and they're going to go out of business, and this is going to be the only game left in town.
The Polis administration is also fighting back. Lieutenant Governor Diane Primavera held a news conference recently to rail against hospitals for seeing record profits while patients are suffering with high premiums.
We were naive to trust large hospital systems to pass the savings on to our consumers. Policymakers should not make that mistake again.
And Representative Dylan Roberts says he won't be swayed in his effort.
Well, I think the fact that they are spending thousands and will be close to millions of dollars at some point on a idea that hasn't been even put into a bill yet is frankly ridiculous and an incredible waste of money. But it also proves that the hospitals and the health insurance companies and the people who make money off of the healthcare industry clearly have plenty of money.
Back in Eagle County, retiree Jamie Harrison doesn't care about the rhetoric going on at the state capitol. He says many of his neighbors are going without coverage, and he thinks a public option could help.
There's always the possibility that the way it happens ends up not being as good as we all want it to be. Maybe it even turns out not to be a good thing. I have a hard time imagining that, but it's certainly possible. But we've got to do something. Let's take a step. Let's get something together so that we can at least see what the impacts are and modify it as needed as we go along.
I'm Scott Franz in Avon, Colorado.
From Colorado's Front Range to eastern Utah, communities are standing up to oil and natural gas drilling, and the Bureau of Land Management made some changes to the upcoming March lease sale. Here's KDNK's Morning Edition host, Steve Cole.
The Bureau of Land Management has removed over 8,000 acres from its upcoming Colorado oil and gas lease sale in March. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports the BLM deferred almost 2,000 acres in Mesa County due to lawsuit challenging the Grand Junction Field Office's resource management plan. Another lawsuit surrounding greater sage-grouse habitat led to the deferral of acreage in Jackson, Moffat, and Rio Blanco counties. The deferrals mean the land will not be up for sale in March, but it could at some point in the future.
Colorado activists say penalties for oil and gas severance tax violations should be enforced. KDNK's Lucas Turner has more.
In a letter sent to Colorado Oil and Gas Commission Director Jeff Robbins Thursday, activist group Colorado Rising for Communities and sister group Colorado Rising asked for clarification on the agency's recent statement to the press. In the statement, the COGCC said it would not enforce penalties against oil and gas operators who failed to file over 50,000 required monthly well reports from 2016 to 2018. This information comes from a report released by the state auditor's office last week, which found that over two-thirds of oil and gas operators in the state were out of compliance. The missing reports mean operators may have skirted millions of dollars in owed severance taxes. The COGCC did not levy any fines for the failed reporting during the three-year period, and now says a one-year statute of limitations legally prohibits any enforcement actions. Colorado Rising and affiliated groups say there is legal precedent to enforce the penalties and is threatening legal action for noncompliance. The group's executive director, Joe Salazar, says the state's Oil and Gas Commission needs to, quote, live up to its statutory and fiscal responsibilities by taking strong action against bad industry players. I'm Lucas Turner.
In Utah, KZMU reporter Molly Marcello says that elected officials in Moab City and Grand County are against proposed oil and gas leasing in the Sand Flats Recreation Area.
Both councils passed resolutions asking the Utah Bureau of Land Management to remove two nominated parcels from a June oil and gas lease sale.
It's a water issue and it's a recreation issue.
Moab City Mayor Emily Niehaus, Sand Flats Recreation Area is home to the internationally known Slick Rock Bike Trail. The county estimates Sand Flats contributes nearly $7 million in net value to the local economy. The nominated parcels also sit on top of Moab's sole source aquifer. There are concerns Moab's tourism economy would be irreparably damaged if water resources were impaired.
And I think it's worth it to mention that this particular area is our Sand Flats bike trail, and there are a lot of places where oil and gas development really fit with the landscape, and this is just probably not one of them.
The parcels in question do carry stipulations that bar surface disturbances like road building and drill pads, but hydrocarbons could be reached through horizontal drilling on adjacent lands. This nomination has drawn wide local opposition, even from those known to mostly support oil and gas leasing, like County Council member Curtis Wells.
You know, generally I'm a supporter of multiple use. But I think particularly with Sand Flats, with the motorized and non-motorized, you know, in addition to the camping and hiking, this just isn't really a logical site for high potential oil and gas development.
Grand County's resolution calls the inclusion of these parcels in an oil and gas lease sale, quote, irresponsible development. Reporting from southeastern Utah, I'm Molly Marcello.
The Jordan Cove Energy Project, which plans to ship natural gas to Asian markets from Colorado's western slope, is having a hard time getting all of its permits together. Longtime Paonia activist Pete Kolbenschlag has been following the project and gave me an update this week.
I mean, there's a lot going on around Jordan Cove Energy Project, and this is all leading up to a big decision by the federal government, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC, sometime this spring. So the local decision in Coos Bay was a decision 4-3 to allow dredging in the estuary to allow the big LNG barges to come in. And leading up to it, that same commission had sponsored a study, and in that study, the recommendation came back that going ahead with the Jordan Cove project would not be in the public interest. And so the mayor basically had to break the tie to overrule the council's own commissioned study. The more recent developments with Pembina pulling its permit application from the state kind of highlights a larger issue, and that's a poorly designed, ill-conceived project on its face, going through old-growth forest, potentially seizing land via eminent domain, private property, dredging an estuary, 400 stream and river crossings with the pipeline, and et cetera, et cetera. But there's also a lot of problems overarching the whole project that go beyond the permit denial.
What's the difference between the state denying an extension request for a permit related to crossing river and wetlands and dredging in Coos Bay and what Pembina has withdrawn?
The Clean Water Act gives states the authority to regulate things like dredging and discharge into state waterways. And the process with all the stream crossings and the work that they're doing in wetlands around Coos Bay, the state authorities kick in. So that requires a permit or a series of permits around the Clean Water Act. And Pembina apparently was not getting their work done or felt like they weren't getting their work done, and so they asked for an extension, and the state said no. And so presumably that was some signal to Pembina that they did not have what they needed together to get a permit. And so rather than not getting the permit, presumably, they pulled the request.
So what does that mean?
From my perspective, on its face, it shows that Pembina was not ready with its permit as far as the state was concerned. And Pembina sensed that and pulled its permit. Whether it hopes to go around the state somehow or resubmit, I think, is what the question that people are asking is.
Finally, we end the show as we began, with the Trump administration, which has fast-tracked one of the largest new water projects on the Colorado River. The state of Utah wants to divert more than 86,000 acre-feet of water from Lake Powell, one of the Colorado River's main reservoirs, to St. George and other communities in the southern part of the state. According to Greenwire, Utah first proposed a 140-mile pipeline from Lake Powell over a decade ago, but the plan was stalled by environmental and other reviews during the Obama administration. Then, last fall, the Utah Division of Water Resources updated the proposal, removing a hydropower plant and cutting $100 million from the cost. The Bureau of Reclamation took over managing the project and is now working on an aggressive schedule for the review. The state says the project will provide water security for a growing population and is expected to cost between $1 and $1.7 billion. But environmentalists and conservationists say the Colorado River, which provides water to 40 million people and millions of acres of farmland, is tapped out, and that the pipeline analysis does not take into account impacts of climate change or endangered species. The project comes just when the Colorado River's seven basin states are cutting water use through a new drought contingency plan to protect water levels at Lake Mead and Lake Powell. Fasten your seatbelt for more federal fast-tracking. KDNK will have stories on this week's National Environmental Protection Act hearing in Denver and more on Bureau of Land Management plans to change its own rules about environmental reviews and public comment on projects. That does it for this week's newsreel on KDNK. All of our stories and more are at kdnk.org. The Weekly Newsreel is a news magazine that takes a look at the week's top local and regional news stories aired on KDNK between Monday and Friday. Subscribe to our podcast and give us a review on iTunes. If you have a tip on something you'd like the KDNK news team to cover, send it to news@kdnk.org. All submissions are confidential. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.